AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at reproduction. AgriTalk is sponsored by Full Scale from Helena. Help soybeans reach their full yield potential with an efficient foliar blend of plant extracts and micronutrients from Full Scale. And by Simplot Grower Solutions, we're in your fields and by your side. Learn more at SimplotGrowerSolutions.com. You know, I was kind of half joking yesterday when I said the party was over for soybeans, and then today happened. Wow. July beans ended the week a buck 15 below Monday's high. New crop spring wheat, a buck off its weekly high as well. Cattle caught a bid, and hogs decided, let's test the uptrend heading into the weekend.
Live from the Fond Friday farewell to Pork Week via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll talk with Scott Brown, Extension Ag Economist from the University of Missouri. In the final segment, stay tuned for Lance Honig from NASS. I'm Handsome Newsman Davis Michelson. Now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lowry.
Yeah, it's probably a good thing we've got an economist on with us to wrap up Pork Week so we can figure out what the total bill on this thing's going to be. I mean, the amount of pork that I've consumed. But the good news is there's some leftovers, and I know the people out there that really get into it, and I'm looking right at you, Mike. They don't understand what leftovers are. We've got some leftovers from Pork Week that we're going to have to work through before we wrap things up. And, of course, today's the day
I'm going to, you know what you do? They told me this in track. You run through the finish line, right? Right?
Yes.
You sing to the back of the room, right?
Right.
I've got some pulled pork that I have not yet dealt with. And I will spend the entire evening working on that deal.
I love it.
I'm going
love
way it. Beyond supper.
You know, it used to be my favorite saying to say, you don't split a piece of wood by aiming for the top. You got to aim for the bottom.
Okay? Boom.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I used to say. And then I got log splitter.
Okay, a different analogy then.
I'm going to have to come up with something different. And that log splitter, you know what it taught me?
What did it teach you?
It taught me how dumb I had been for the previous 20 years. Swinging that maul.
Think of the upper body strength that you layered on, though,
right?
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Swing after swing.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. It's easier to burn wood today than it was then. That's for sure.
Yeah.
All right. We have got we've got some ground to cover, and we've got to put some perspective on the way that the market performed this week. AgriTalk is brought to you by the Pork Checkoff, celebrating pork and the people who bring it to your table through real pork. More details available at porkcheckoff.com. Let's get to the news.
Chip, September spring wheat futures on Monday traded to a contract high of 8.45¾. At Wednesday's low, it was $1.03 below that contract high. The dive on Wednesday dropped new crop spring wheat futures into the June 1 upside price gap, but the market, somewhat surprisingly, respected support at the bottom of the gap at 7.41½. The fundamental feature of the week was rain in the U.S. Northern Plains and Canadian prairies. That was bigger news for wheat than the 20 million bushel drop in old crop wheat carryover and the updated winter wheat production estimates. July hard red winter wheat, 2¼ cents lower, 6.38. July soft red dipped 3 cents, 6.80¾. September spring wheat closed at 7.71¼, down 10½ cents today.
Yeah, we didn't talk much about this yesterday, but in the supply and demand report for wheat, you've got your total wheat production, and then we've got the winter wheat crop estimate. So you take your total wheat production, subtract from that the winter wheat production estimate, and it gets your implied other spring wheat and durum wheat combined crop size this year, or this month. It was 589 million bushels. It's unchanged from May. So even with all the issues and the worst ever crop ratings for spring wheat, They'd made no adjustments to that spring wheat crop projection. We'll get our first update on that coming, I believe it's next month in July. Well, we got Lance at the end of the show today. We'll find out when we do get that first spring wheat crop estimate.
Well, December corn futures also.
Wait, whoa.
Have you got the weekly closes?
Yeah, I do. On the week.
Do it.
July SRW down 7 cents. July HRW was up a penny and a half.
Oh,
it seems so weird. But it was up a penny and a half. And September spring wheat futures down 44 and a half.
December corn futures also gapped higher to start the week and traded down into the gap on Wednesday's sell-off. But support at the bottom of that gap at 592 and three quarters is still in place. The bounce off that support level sent prices back to the highest level in 1 month in new crop corn. Mm-hmm. Rains in northern production areas and spillover pressure from wheat limited strength in corn this week, but the 150 million bushel cut to old and new crop corn carryover projections in Thursday's supply and demand report is a tough factor for traders to ignore heading into next week. Price action on the restart of trade on Sunday evening will be determined by the weather forecast. July corn futures 14.5 cents lower, 684 and a half. September corn down 8.5 cents, 629 and three quarters. December corn closed at 609 and three quarters, down 6.75 cents. It's hard not to feel bad about this, man. I don't like this close on a Friday like this.
Well, just hold on. Just hold on here. It may not be as bad as what you think.
Okay.
The weather is clearly going to be the focus, when trade restarts on Sunday evening. But underpinning all of this is going to be that 150 million bushel cut to the old and the new crop corn carryover. Stocks are tight, and I think the market's got to digest that yet. On the week, July corn up a penny and three quarters. These corn up 18 and a quarter. Big bear spread week.
Soybean oil futures were limit down today, and the sell-off from Monday's high totaled $6.78. That was too much for the bean market to shrug off, and prices were dragged down by the sell-off in bean oil. Bean futures bounced back from session lows today, but posted a low-range close for the week. Still, November beans were slightly higher on the week. As in corn, the weather forecast on Sunday will determine the direction of price action in the bean market. July bean futures 35.5 cents lower today, 15.08 1/2. August down 14.82 1/2. November bean futures closed at 14.38 3/4, down 20 3/4 on the day.
Yeah, holy bear spread market this week. July beans down 75 1/4. November soybeans up 3 1/4. Amazing kind of price action.
December cotton futures on Thursday posted a new contract high close, and the market held on to most of the price advance today. July cotton 36 points lower at 87 cents even. December cotton down 29 points, 87.92. Weeklies on cotton, Chip, how'd we do?
Yeah, D's cotton on the week was up 204 points.
Oh, very good. Yeah. Well, today's strength in the cattle complex started in the feeder market, where lower corn prices helped push futures to the upside. The solid rally in live cattle futures sets the stage for a test of resistance at 121.22 1/2 to start the next week. August live cattle, $1.47 1/2 cents higher, 120.02 1/2. October up 157 1/2, 125.77 1/2. August feeders climbed 277 1/2 to 151.17 1/2. And on the snout side, the downside correction in lean hog futures accelerated today, resulting in a fourth consecutive lower close in the July contract. Still, the summer month contract is so far respecting support around the 119 level. July, $1.35 lower, 119.97 1/2. August down 172 1/2, 116.97 1/2. Chip.
On the week, August live cattle up $1.95. August feeder cattle up $1.25. And July lean hogs on the week down 62 1/2 cents in a 4-day downside correction. That's pretty encouraging.
So
we got
that's
Scott so Brown next.
For a farmer, every day is different, and every season tells its own story. Make this the year you do it your way. Coron Metra is a foliar fertilizer that lets you decide when the time is right for nutrition. Metra gives you flexibility. It gives your tank efficiency. And Metra gives your crop more than just nitrogen. Coron Metra, the next evolution in crop nutrition. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration before use.
Farming in the 21st century requires data-driven technology and product decisions that are rooted in on-the-ground insights. At Simplot Grower Solutions, we're in your fields and by your side to help you grow yields and profits. Simplot is a pioneer and innovator in plant nutrition and agronomic science. Our local experts offer grounded advice to help you get the most out of every acre. Go to SimplotGrowerSolutions.com to see how we can be a one-stop resource. Simplot Grower Solutions, a partner you can grow with.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me. Yeah, quite the week in the grain markets in particular with the way that the bear spreads traded. I just real quick again, July corn was up a buck and was up a penny and three quarters today, but Dees was up on the week, up a penny and three quarters on the week. Dees corn up 18 and a quarter. But that bean market move, good grief. The July down 75 and the new crop up 3 cents. Wow. It's absolutely crazy. All right. We got to wrap up Pork Week coverage by getting the outlook from one of the top animal ag outlook guys I know, Scott Brown at the University of Missouri. He joins us right now. Scott, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
I'm doing good, Chip. How are you today?
Doing just fine, just fine. I said it. The price action that we've seen this week, it was a 4-day downside correction, and on the week off a whole 62.5 cents. I mean, it feels like a pretty good market yet, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. I certainly hope producers are happy with what we've been seeing. I don't think many of us would have predicted quite the strength we've seen this year. So what a nice year for hog producers.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, when we go back even more than a year ago from right now, Scott, I know that we were having – well, actually right now a year ago, you and I had a conversation during Pork Week, and we were talking about how disappointing it was that we had all of the disruption from the pandemic – because 2020 was supposed to be the recovery year for the hog market. Well, it feels like we just pushed it back. And 2020 in reality didn't hurt us that bad, did it?
That's correct, Chip. You look back and we came out of 2020, frankly, better than I think anybody would have expected. And I have a hunch when you and I would have talked a year ago, we would have been a lot more negative about where things were going to head for the remainder of 2020. And correctly, you said we've pushed this into 2021. So we've started nicely. And thanks to what's been some incredibly good demand, we continue to see some pretty good prices out there.
You bet. When you talk about demand, I'm sure that everybody's first thought goes to the export market. And I want to talk about that. But the ability of this domestic market to make it through the pandemic the way we did, Scott, was nothing short of pretty miraculous.
Absolutely. I think a good description when you look at where we sit today, I'm still curious to watch whether we've fundamentally shifted the demand for pork in terms of the different products. You see where loin prices are today. A lot of strength there that I might not have anticipated. Is that the holdover effect from some of us in the U.S. as consumers learning how to cook pork again, learning what the possibilities are? If that's the case, we might have a pretty good story here for a period of time.
Yeah. Earlier this week, we talked with Jim Murray, who is the world executive chef for the Pork Board. And we talked about this exact point, Scott, and he seems to think, based on the consumer trends that they've identified through some of the research that they've done at the Pork Board, that home cooking and pork on the menu in that home cooking is something that's here to stay. That is going to influence some of our pricing models going into 2022 and beyond, won't it?
Absolutely. I look back and have always said, what's it take for us to get wholesale loin prices back above a dollar? You know, we kind of saw that flip of everybody wanted bacon on everything, yep, and yet some other parts of that carcass was struggling. Yet now with loin sitting here at, you know, what's roughly a little close to $1.30, a much different situation. And if that holds for us, then all of a sudden, I think we can talk about overall stronger pork demand into 2022.
Okay, I want to talk about bacon in a moment, but these loin prices, they were so attractive for such a long period of time at the retail in the meat case. Are you concerned that we're going to see a price on loins at the meat case that might generate a little sticker shock?
I'm not too concerned, I guess, at this point, Chip, okay, and I say that because we've got a lot of prices going up in the meat case. It's not just pork loins by themselves going up. So I think, it might be sticker shock in total, but it's not like it sticks out relative to some competing products there.
Okay, good. Now, on the bacon and the belly side of things, good grief, that belly market is just, it's red hot again. It feels like bacon is getting back to its condiment status that we had pre-pandemic with the food service and the restaurant demand coming back.
I think you hit the nail on the head. The food service side restarting and firing really hot for us right now. If you think back, we were probably having trouble getting rid of some of those food service bundles of bacon back in 2020, and that's certainly not the case today. And just all of the issues of getting product from farm all the way to retail, to me, keeps the supply side fairly tight and belly prices fairly strong for a while yet.
Okay. All right. Okay, now let's talk demand. Had Joe Sheely from U.S. Meat Export Federation on the show yesterday. We talked about that Asian market and how important it is, but I want to stay a little closer to home and talk Mexico, Central America, Dominican Republic, and so on. But Mexico first, because there's more pork available at convenience stations is what I understand, Scott. They're making it easier for Mexican consumers to buy pork, and that you make it easier, they're going to buy more.
That's for sure. I mean, the data we have, April of this year was an incredible year for pork to Mexico. You know, we were at 67,400 metric tons of product there. That's up 58% from a year ago, Chip. And you put that in value terms and up more than 125% in value terms. So not only are we getting more quantity, but we're talking about moving that quantity at a higher price. If that isn't a win for us, I don't know what else we can go for here. And hopefully that market stays strong for the remainder of 2021.
Yeah, yeah. The other point that Joe made was six Central American countries are in the top 20 of destinations for U.S. pork. He gave a lot of the credit to CAFTA, Central American Free Trade Agreement. I'd forgotten about it, Scott, because it was 15 years ago, but that's how long it took to realize the full benefits.
I think the point there is a good one of trade agreements. Just because we sign them one day doesn't mean the next day that everything is good and we get all the benefits there. It takes a long time to get into those new markets, and that is certainly a case we're seeing in a number of those countries. I was just looking, you know, you ignore the top kind of four markets for U.S. pork, and everybody else year-to-date's been up 117 million pounds, including many of those Central American countries. It's amazing the kind of spread that I see happening in terms of it's not demand just from one place, which we look back at 2020, and it was really China-driven.
Yep.
2021 is driven very differently. In fact, China being lower, all of these other countries that are picking up the slack, maybe that's their own COVID-19 recovery starting to happen, to me, that's a risk management strategy for U.S. pork exports, if you will.
Absolutely. Spread that demand base out rather than all the eggs in one basket.
Exactly. When you looked at most of the growth we saw in U.S. pork trade in 2020 was headed to China, that and that not being the case in 2021 just makes me more comfortable that export demand can continue to increase out of the United States here for the next few years.
Yeah, okay. You know, and I've said this several times, but it needs to be said again. In many cases, when we're talking about exports, we are talking about whole muscle cuts in some cases. But in many cases, we're talking about a lot of the product that doesn't have space in U.S. meat case. I mean, it's the cuts that U.S. consumers just don't find desirable, right?
That's correct. We have to find a place for those things that have no value or very little value here in the United States. And many countries in the rest of the world certainly provide that opportunity for us.
Absolutely. All right. We're talking with Scott Brown from the University of Missouri. That's the demand side. We got a Hogs and Pigs report coming up later this month. Let's find out what Scott thinks it's going to say next.
AGI SureTrack's Bin Manager is the industry's leading grain bin management solution, supported by the only platform on the market to connect data points from across your operation. Soil, weather, machine, agronomic, equipment, and grain characteristic data combine to deliver a data story that drives profit and production. Mobile or desktop, stay informed, stay safe, and stay connected with AGI SureTrack. For more information, visit www.agisuretrack.com.
Time now for headlines lifted from Pro Farmer's First Thing Today. Delaware lawmakers are pressuring EPA to ease refiners' blending obligations. Brazil's sugar and ethanol production surge after a slow start. The U.S. budget deficit grew to a record $2.1 trillion during the first 8 months of the fiscal year. A bipartisan group of senators have reached an agreement to an infrastructure proposal. A Wisconsin judge issued temporary restraining orders on USDA's socially disadvantaged loan forgiveness program, a controversial move there. South Dakota joins the interstate shipment program meant to diversify meat and poultry processing, and Congress begins responding to the livestock pricing issue. Pro Farmer members had this information hours ago. Equip yourself with the same information next week. Visit tryprofarmer.com. That's tryprofarmer.com. For more right now.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Our name says it all. AgriTalk. What more do you need to know?
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Glad that you are with us as we are wrapping up another week. A big week, pork week here on AgriTalk.
It's huge.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And we are doing that in a conversation with Scott Brown from the University of Missouri. Before we get back to Scott, let's go ahead and recap how the market's closed.
Chip July hard red winter wheat was 2¼ cents lower today at 638. September spring wheat closed at 771¼, down a dime and a half. July corn futures 14½ cents lower at 684½. December corn closed at 609¾, down 6¾ cents. July soybean futures 35½ cents lower at 1508½. Novi beans closed at 1438¾, down 20¾ cents. July cotton, 36 points lower, 87 cents even. August live cattle were $1.47½ higher at 120.02½. Then August feeders climbed to 77.5, 151.17.5 at the close. And August hogs fell $1.72.5 to 116.97.5. Man, Pork Week really took it out of the hog market this week. They're tired. Yeah. They're just tired.
Yeah,
they're fine.
Did.
You overdid it a little bit, maybe. Yeah, yep. At midweek.
Yeah. All That's right. Thank you, Davis. Yeah. Scott Brown, University of Missouri. You know what? When I made contact to get you on the show, Scott, I probably should have checked the MLB schedule first. Are you a Royals or a Cardinals fan?
I have to profess to be from the west side of the state, so a Royals fan, and so good. It's been cyclical in whether or not it's good or not.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's okay because, you know, the Cubs and Cardinals are playing right now. as we speak, unfortunately, the Cubs are down 2 in the top of the fifth, and Cardinals are threatening big time to put up a crooked number here in the fifth, so... Got to get it back. All right. June 24th, I believe it is, we get the next quarterly Hogs and Pigs report. What are some of the main factors that you're going to be looking for in this report, Scott?
So I think there's a few things, Chip, out of the report that I'm interested in. Number one is, what kind of revisions do we actually see out of USDA in this report? And I'm not suggesting necessarily there has to be big ones, but when you think about coming through COVID-19 and many of the impacts, it's been a tough ride, I would say, for trying to figure out where the U.S. Breeding herd has been. I guess specifically here, you know, I look at a state like Missouri, where back in March, USDA would have suggested Missouri down about 40,000 sows relative to the previous, relative to a year ago. I don't know where we lost 40,000 sows for sure. Maybe we have at the end of the day. But I guess I say all that of, what kind of breeding number are we really going to get? Have feed costs and higher feed costs and uncertainty kept breeding inventory in check in the next report we get, or will there be some expansion? Let's hope it pretty much stays in check. And then part two of that is just pigs per litter. You know, we've seen a number of disease issues that I think have slowed productivity some here in 2021. Do we have some rebound as we look at the data we'll get out of the report here at the end of June? Doesn't take long for us to start to talk about more supplies of hogs in the latter part of 2021. I don't want to overcall that at this point, but something that I'm going to be paying attention to.
Yeah. Yeah, those disease issues. We talked with Dr. Paul Sundberg from Swine Health Information Center on Wednesday, and that PERS 144, Scott, it's created a problem deeper into the year than what anybody expected. I mean, that it's got the potential to tighten up supply significantly when we get into fall, doesn't it?
So it very well could. And I think I'll be an economist here for a second to say, okay, we know we face inelastic demand. Things like PERS that limits the supply side for certain gives us a much higher price impact. And so those kind of events certainly have the opportunity to make markets stronger than we would have anticipated as we enter the latter part of the year. And I'll come back to say, I think high feed costs will also keep too many folks from getting too excited about expansion plans. We've got a long ways to go before we get this corn crop in the bin.
Well, and keep that economist hat on. And in addition to the high feed costs, construction costs. That's got to be a barrier right now, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, Chip, if you ask me what's the number one issue, it's all of this cost increase that we're seeing in many ways across the board, and particularly to how do we get pork from the farm level to the retail level, transportation issues, whether you're talking about domestic or international, shortage of labor at all parts along the way. All of those things tell me it's going to be hard to make a big increase in the supply side here in the foreseeable future.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm going to ask you to keep that economist hat on a little bit longer here, and I want to ask a general question. When as we continue to see this economy recover from the pandemic lows, when we get to that full recovery, and I don't know, maybe what I should be asking is, will the February 2022 economy be bigger than the February 2020 economy was?
It sure looks to be that will be the case, Chip, by the time we get there. I think the strength we've seen thus far in 2021 has been very amazing. I do worry we get out there at some point. I kind of view the point in time we're in right now is everybody's ready to get out. Everybody's ready to travel. Everybody's ready to go eat out. All those things have been really beneficial to pork markets. And as we get into 2022 and we kind of get over that initial surge of recovery, do we have a hiccup or a slowdown in that demand side? If consumers wake up and say, well, I don't have a lot more money in my pocket than I had a year ago because I no longer have those stimulus dollars potentially helping, what's that do for us? That's my only cautionary side, I guess, right now in terms of that general economy, I guess, that and just overall price inflation and what it means.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. I'm trying to figure out if this inflation is temporary or if it's going to be, or if it's real inflation, something that the Fed is going to have to deal with down the road.
It seems pretty early on. I think we'll, so to me, some of this is just, again, transportation or other bottlenecks between primary supply and primary demand that oftentimes labor needs to be a part of that solution. And I know we're struggling finding available labor everywhere. I don't think some of those things fix themselves very quickly. So to me, the supply side of many of these industries are going to be somewhat hindered here for a period of time.
Okay.
That likely keeps prices higher for the medium term, but I always say you give folks economic incentive to expand with profitability, and they'll do so. It may take time, but they will do so.
Yep. Yep, I'm with you. I'm with you 100% on that. Okay, take me through what this hog market looks like through the end of the year, Scott.
So I think we continue to see pretty good strength here through the summer months. I think that, you saw USDA just today raise their this week raise their estimate for 2021 by $3 on hogs. I don't think that's a bad move in their direction. I just remind you, by the way, Chip, that is $35, $36 higher annual price than where USDA would have said we were going to be a year ago at this time for 2021. So it is amazing. I do think we could get in the latter part of 2021 and talk about some lower prices. To me, that has a lot more to do with what we see when we get the Hogs and Pigs report here in another month.
Okay. Farrow to finish guys right now are making some money, Scott. Can we, I know that we've got to be concerned about the feed costs going forward, but to me, it sounds like you're thinking there's some money to be made through the end of the year.
It seems like it to me, Chip. And again, I think there's opportunities to take some risk off the table for the remainder of the year.
Okay.
As well, just given where those markets are.
Okay. We've talked about a lot of optimism on the demand side of things. Is there anything out there that's in the back of your mind and you're saying, geez, I hope I don't see this happen?
Well, I think we got a little taste of this last year with packing plant slowdown shutdowns. It does not take much to get us in a situation that, although there might be demand for that pork, finding a shackle space to hang on could be a problem. And we're just tight. We're very, and I should be careful when I say tight. We don't have a lot of slack capacity sitting there, right, and we need it all to keep operating.
Yeah. Yeah. We need it all to keep operating at the same speed. And it looks like that's going to change come July 1, Scott.
It sure looks like we have an opportunity to slow chains down again. I do worry about what that means for us, especially if we do grow supplies in the latter part of 2021. I may not be quite so worried about what it means July 1, but we're going to need that capacity, Chip, at some point down the road. And you tell me who's interested in expanding processing capacity right now.
Yeah,
I don't think the line's very long. And again, they all look at the lack of labor to run that plant.
Yep.
Even if they could get one built somewhere in the country, it's a struggle to make sure you can keep it operating.
That's right. That's right. Great conversation, Scott. Thank you so much helping us wrap up Pork Week.
Hey, you bet, Chip. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Scott Brown, University of Missouri. We got Lance Honig up next.
If the world is your oyster, we've got pearls of wisdom on AgriTalk.
That's the way to head into a weekend right there. And we are definitely, the picks are definitely into the home stretch on this Pork Week. No doubt dude.
Dragging themselves across the finish line.
Yeah. Great conversation there with Scott Brown. And that issue that we were talking about at the end there with the line speeds, we've been talking about it this week. It was the priority with the most urgency at the World Pork Expo for the National Pork Producers Council this week is to find some way to reverse the federal court decision that is essentially going to slow line speeds out there and create some real issues throughout the industry. Yeah, I mean, For the markets that are going to be most impacted, Terry Walters, from the president-elect NPPC, he's afraid that his market is going to be off his slaughter capacity in his market area is going to be off as much as 20%. That's going to ripple throughout the industry. And when you start losing, Dermot Hayes at Iowa State University says 2.5% of slaughter capacity throughout the industry. That's a lot.
Yeah,
that is a lot for this market to have to deal with. All right, let's have a conversation with Lance Honig. Lance is the chief of the crops branch at the National Ag Statistics Services. Lance, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Hey, Chip, doing pretty well. Nice rainy afternoon here. Trying to wrap up the week.
You know what happened here? They got rains to the west of us, and then the system jumped me, Lance, and rains popped up to the east of us. And I'm sitting here with like 7/10 of an inch of rain in the last 40 days here at my location. It is dry, dude. It is dry.
Yeah. Sounds like somebody's not living right, but I don't know.
I'm trying to figure it out. I say prayers twice a day and everything, Lance. I don't know what's happening. Hey, I looked it up, and I think, and plus I got a message from Bill, and I checked it. The first spring wheat crop estimate of the year comes in the July crop production report, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. All right. So when will you be working on that one, and what goes into that spring wheat estimate?
So for the spring wheat forecast, we're going to be surveying farmers right about the 1st of July. We'll get out there a day or two ahead of that up until about the 4th or 5th of the month there. And so we're just going to be surveying farmers and ask them what they expect their yields to be. It's a little bit early in the season, but, boy, I tell you, a lot of that spring wheat area probably in a lot worse shape than what you were just talking about where you're at. So it'll be interesting to see what that looks like.
Yeah, certainly will be. What surveys are you working on right now, Lance?
Well, you know, June's probably the busiest survey time of the year we've got here at NAS. We've got a couple of really big ones, our June Ag Survey, our June Area Survey. They're actually separate surveys, but kind of perform a lot the same way. But, boy, by the time you put the two of them together, we're trying to get a hold of close to 90,000 farmers, and we are in the home stretch. We've probably got about 3-4 days left to get a hold of folks. So, you know, this is make or break time for us. If you want to see good numbers in the report on June 30th, boy, the best thing you can do is fill out those forms, answer those phone calls when they come.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've got that going on. And is the acreage estimate still being developed?
Yeah, and it's those surveys that are going to feed into the acreage report, yes. as well as the grain stocks report as well.
Yes.
So, yeah, 2, 3, maybe 4 days left of data collection, so time's running out.
Yep. How is the response rate?
Well, you know, it's coming in. We don't really know exactly what the response rate is until we finish, obviously.
Sure.
But boy, I tell you what, you need to squeak out every day that you can. We've got probably, 2,000 enumerators out there helping us make contacts on this. So we're certainly putting, all efforts out there. One of the challenges right now is the fact that, we've talked about this before, Chip, with the area survey. Because of the situation we're in right now, we've got to make phone calls there as well. And so, we're really across the board. Getting ready for the acreage numbers, really relying on farmers picking up those phone calls and helping us out.
Okay. The options for the farmers to participate in these surveys, is it answering the call, or is there another way that they can get the information in?
Well, on the, I mentioned there's two surveys. On the ag survey side, they should have gotten something in the mail with some instructions on how to go online and fill it out. So that's an option for them. There's always an option to mail it too. But, at this point, that's going to be a little bit late by the time those forms get back if you haven't sent it yet. So I'm going to kind of take that one off the table for today. But on the area survey, you've got to do that with an enumerator. And so you're going to need to work with that local enumerator who's trying to get in touch with you. They're going to be somebody from, fairly close by your area. That's our field enumerators out there doing that survey. So
Right. They're
going to be some local folks trying to reach out and talk you through that over the phone.
All right. So answer the phone. And you said it right up front there, Lance. The numbers that your shop generates can only be as good as the numbers coming in, right?
Yeah, that's right. And, unless you get 100% response, it means there's always room for improvement. So we're always looking to do better. And if you're looking to help us do better, best thing you can do is provide the data.
Very good. Very good. Lance, thanks. Good luck with it. And we will talk with you again soon.
All right. Take care, Chip. Enjoy your weekend.
You bet.
Hope you get some rain.
Yeah. Thanks, man. Thanks. That's Lance Honig, chief of the crops branch at USDA NASS. National Weather Service 6 to 10 day outlook June 17th through the 21st has got above normal temperatures expected over most of the Corn Belt. Far southeastern areas of the Corn Belt would be the exception there, where normal temperatures are in the forecast. Precipitation below normal across the entire Corn Belt. 8 to 14 day, this is for June 19th through the 25th. Above normal temperatures expected over the belt except for Ohio, where normal temperatures are expected. And then the below normal precipitation pushes to the western belt with normal to above normal precip in the eastern belt. All right. Thank you so much for listening today. That's from me. That's from Big Apple Joe Stackler and from Davis. Monday morning, we got Machinery Pete and Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa. Monday afternoon, Mark Rempe from Quad Commodities.